Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to Gangland Wire, hosted by former Kansas City Police Intelligence Unit Detective Gary Jenkins.
Welcome, all you wiretappers out there. Back on the, I don't know how many weeks of isolation or self-quarantining or whatever we're doing here in Kansas City, like the rest of you are throughout the whole world, actually, which is what is amazing to me. And as you know, I'm putting up some extra podcasts, and I'm reaching outside of the United States again to my friend Nate Henley from up in Toronto, Canada. Nate, welcome.
Hi, it's great to be back here, Gary. Great that you're still healthy, and I'm still healthy.
Really, I know, and I hope all you wiretappers out there are healthy too. It's we've got our friend Basil Terabiche from down in Dallas, Texas. Basil, Nate helps me with social media marketing. He's really basically a fan, but he'll get on my. I made him administrator of my Facebook page, and he'll put extras. Photos and articles and things like that quite often. Well, he'll actually record a movie review with me every once in a while, a mob movie review. And last time I got hold of him to record one, he was working double shifts down in Dallas, Texas in a hospital. He's a technician. So he's working. I mean, this was like, he texted me at 4 in the afternoon. He said, well, I can't do it. They've asked me to keep working. And then he texted me the next morning, said he just got off. So he was working. That was almost 20 hours from the time that I talked to him the first time. And so I haven't talked to him since. I just, I've noticed he's pretty much silent on social media. And he did put up a picture of one of his fellow employees with a Superman mask the other day. So they're even kind of making their own mask down there, too. So it's, you know, and my friend Casey Walsh's wife is the head of surgery at General or Truman Medical Center, used to be General Hospital. And so those guys are all working like crazy over there. That's kind of the local hospital that takes indigent people and people without insurance. So it's, you know, I tell you, there's a lot of heroes out there. Plus, just like the grocery guy that's bringing some groceries here later on today, they had to go in and stock those things up and put them in a bag and haul them out to me and other people. You know, they're working, manning those grocery stores and all those things. So a big shout out to all those folks that you know, never thought they'd be heroes. You know, the orderlies at the hospital and the checkout people at the grocery stores. Who would ever thought, huh?
Absolutely, heroes all.
Really. So we're going to talk a little bit about how boring is it to be a member of a mob. You brought that up when we talked before, and I thought, how interesting, because I have thought that, and I remember seeing some of these young guys that want to be mobsters, and they didn't really have jobs. I think maybe they'd have get some kind of a score every now and then, but they lived at home with their mothers and fathers usually. Remember this one kid. He wanted to be a mobster so bad. He was probably 19 or 20. He wasn't going to college. He was out of high school. He was hanging out around all the older mobsters, and we got an informant that told us that, and we noticed he always wore black, and he had a black car. And they said his room had pictures, had the posters from The Godfather all over it, and then had black light in it to light them up. There was some kind of would light up with black light. And he had black sheets and black covers, and he lived in the bedroom of the house that he grew up in.
So, of course.
You know, and since then, I've gotten a connection that knows his dad, has known his dad for a long time, who's now deceased. And he said his dad said, yeah, that kid, he won't do anything. He thinks he wants to be a mobster.
Yeah. It is interesting. I learned about this through Joseph Vistoni, who was the FBI agent who infiltrated mafia circles in New York City under the name Donnie Brasco. You know, he sort of pretended that he was part of a criminal background and sort of was accepted into mob circles, but very much low end. That a lot of what he did was he would just sort of hang out with these guys, and they sort of had their own little clubhouse. And he said that, you know, they'd spend these long afternoons just sort of playing cards. They'd always play gin rummy, was their big favorite. They'd order out for lunch, and they spent an inordinate amount of time talking about big scores they were going to do or scores they'd done in the past. Yeah. And then they'd maybe get together in the evening and actually pull something off. And he noticed a couple things. He said that in his observations, members of the mafia tended to talk about their job much more than people like who work for an insurance company or a bank or, you know, a government license office, that this was 24/7. This was their identity, their life. And just, he was astonished how boring a lot of it was, that he thought it would be sort of, you know, gangbusters and shoot him up kind of stuff. I think that would apply to, like, you know, the guys at the very top would have this sort of fun life where they hang out in nightclubs and, you know, start cocaine and stuff. But
yeah,
a lot of guys at the bottom, it's very, he said, very mundane. And some of the times that he would be called in, he wasn't allowed to take part in criminal activities, but he would do things like, for example, he pulled guard duty when this big mafiosa boss came to town, and him and one of his mob buddies sort of guarded the bar where this guy was having his big, you know, meeting. So, you know, you spend hours just standing around, and sure, maybe you're allowed to have a gun, pulling guard duty while these big shots in there have these endless cigarettes and coffees and talk about stuff. And you're not allowed to, you know, ask them any questions. You know, you just have to guard, stay there. So a lot of it was just very dull. And I think in pop culture, there's a tendency to focus on, like, big shots, you know, what Al Capone was doing. Oh, yeah, look at this life he led. You know, he smoked cigars and he hung out with all these, you know, Hollywood celebrities and politicians, and he had all this money. And they tend to forget that Al Capone had hundreds of guys in his payroll. And a lot of what they did was stand around guarding him.
Yeah.
Or do very penny ante stuff, like they go around collecting bet money or something, which, you know, okay, maybe it's better than having a 9-to-5 office job, but it's not exactly like, you know, hanging out with the, you know, it's not exactly the glamorous high life. And Pistone also made the observation that a lot of these guys tended to always be on the verge of being broke, that they, you know, they'd make a big score, and you have to kick up a big chunk of whatever you make to the guy, you know, of you. Otherwise, you're in deep, deep shit. So you have to kick up a chunk of that. And you've got all this cash. And these guys, you know, first of all, they're not hugely well educated. So they're not too big on, okay, let's invest this in T-bonds or something. They tend to spend it all. They also tended to gamble a lot. And he said they inevitably broke. He was actually lending money to the guys he hung out. He couldn't believe that. He'd always be like, well, give me a $50 for, you know, just for the day, you know, I just need a little money. And he's like, okay, sure, here's $50. So much for this sort of, like, idea that all mobsters are rich and powerful and glamorous and, you know, he's living this incredibly exciting life. So I thought that was very relevant. Anyone who's interested in joining, you know, any these organizations. You're not going to start at the top. You know, it's just like, it's like joining anything, like joining Walmart, you know. Join Walmart, you're probably going to be a greeter. It's your first job for stocking shelves. Not going to be the big guy at the top.
You know, and I've stood around and guarded people, and it is boring. there's nothing worse than standing around guarding somebody. There is nothing to do. And you know, nobody's going to like crash in, and at least I guess they had to could look out for surveillance maybe or see if there's any cops around. You know, kind of interesting about that guard duty when a big shot would come to town. Well, one of those times was a Sicilian. When Carmine Galante met with the Sicilian, came in from out of town, was kind of the start of the Pizza Connection story. And what was that guy's name? That was his mentor, Ruggiero, Lefty Ruggiero, told him, he's two guns, Ruggiero, the Al Pacino character. He was kind of a loser. But he told him, he said, yeah, he said, those guys are from Sicily and Carmine Galante, you know, that we can't know anything about that, have anything to do with that. Nobody's supposed to know. And they got this big heroin thing going. So that was one of the tips that as some other agents at the same time were actually kind of starting to develop the probable cause on these Sicilians that were working with the Bonanno family. And then they, you know, and that's how it works, Nate. You get one tip one place and you get another tip from another place. And you just, or you see people getting together and you don't know why they're getting together. And you talk about the boring life of a mobster, the boring life of a policeman investigating the mob sometimes, because you just sit and watch. You know, I sat on one of, in one apartment on this one joint, 8 hours a day for a solid month. And they're just, you know, nothing ever happened. And, you know, what's funny is about a month after we quit doing that, you know, we documented all the different people we needed to document and got pictures of them and all that. And about a month later, they ran in the back door and shot the place up, shot two or three mob guys that were in there of an opposing faction. So I don't know what we'd have done if we'd have seen, we were watching the front, we'd have seen that guy, our main guy we were watching, seen him run out the front door from our, you know, second floor apartment, and then somebody else had burst out the back door behind him and popped him with the shotgun. We'd have been going, oh my God. But you know, it's hours and hours of boredom followed by moments of sheer terror. So
yes, somewhat like being in the army, I guess.
Yeah, mob guys are kind of the same way, as hours and hours of boredom, and then they go out and do a score and there's sheer terror and adrenaline running while they do a score, and then it's over.
The other thing I liked about the Donnie Brasco, and you're talking about, you know, his mentor, the Rodrigo, I always get his name wrong, Lefty Two Guns.
Ruggiero
at one point takes, you know, him aside, takes Joseph Pistone, who's pretending to be Donnie Brasco, and gives him this sort of etiquette lesson, this mafia etiquette, shave your mustache, you always got to dress decently, like wear slacks and a dress shirt, don't show up in a t-shirt, sweatpants, always be different, you know, like you said, always sort of like a made guy tells you to do something, you do it. Never disagree with a made guy, even if, you know, he's totally wrong about something, even if it's something really obvious, like who won the World Series last year. You just nod your head and agree with them and basically don't make waves. And it was just sort of, I just thought it was funny because, you know, you're reading this and it's like these guys think they're joining the mob because it gives them the freedom to do whatever the hell they want. I don't want to be cooped up in an office where they tell you what to do. And here it is. He's, you know, Lefty Two Guns is telling him what to do. You know, you got to do this. You got to do that. Don't dress this way. You know, he's even giving him dress tips. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like down to like, oh yeah, you know, always wear a good shirt. And you know, that's how they don't ever wear jeans. I remember that was another one of his rules. Yeah. Well, yeah, that would be really offensive, you know, to show up in jeans and a t-shirt.
Yeah. And, you know, it was the same way in Kansas City. I just never talked to anybody that talked about that. But we knew that our boss had a strict rule against any facial hair. And nobody that was close to him had any facial hair.
They all
dressed the same. It was like, you know, like off-duty policemen. I could spot off-duty policemen from a mile off. We all dressed the same. And these guys all dress the same, you know. At one time, there were those kind of polyester Sansa belt slacks and polo shirts and a leather coat in the winter and a snap brim hat maybe, or some other kind of slouch hat or something. But they all dress the same. Cars were all about the same, too. I guess, you know, Pete, we're kind of the same all over, actually, whatever we do.
Yeah, that's true enough. That's true enough. And I thought it was interesting, too, that he discovered the other surprise he had was he discovered that a lot of the mafia income came from just from illegal gambling.
Yeah.
He assumed a lot of the mafia money would be from, you know, something exciting, I guess you could say, you know, be it drugs or gun smuggling or prostitution. And of course, there was that ink. There was that piece that was definitely there. But he said a lot of it was just illegal poker games, you know, and some, you know, the back of some clubhouse or some bar, and they have these guys playing poker. Oh, here's your share of the, you know, $500 for letting us play here or something.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what he did was just he'd go around with lefty two guns. They'd collect gambling debts and stuff. So a lot of things that, you know, took him by surprise. And I think, yeah, you know, pop culture, Hollywood, they've got to glamorize it a bit, make it a little more exciting than it really is. But even if you watch it, one thing I noticed, I watched the Godfather movies the other day. And if you watch real close, there are always these dudes in the background just sort of standing there.
Yeah, just standing there.
Watching Al Pacino, watching Marlon Brando, watching, you know, all the characters. And they're not doing anything. They're just doing a lot of standing around, you know. So gives you a bit of an eyeful of what real life would be like in these conditions.
Really? And you know, I've never seen that in real life, where somebody just stands like that and guards the boss.
I would imagine they'd be a little more casual.
They may be somewhere around in the area, but they never just stand like that, like they're guarding the boss. Even in kind of little meetings they might have in the back of a bar or something, they were just there. Maybe we're a little less sophisticated here in Kansas City. I don't know.
Come on.
Maybe they do that stuff in New York City.
Yeah, who knows? You know, they're trying to be a little flashier or something.
They definitely knew it in the movies, so don't they?
Yeah. A lot of dudes just standing.
You
know, and I'm like, I can imagine standing like that for 8 hours would be kind of like tough in the knee joints or something.
Really? Yeah, those big scores that they get, they don't come along very often. And most of the mob guys, they don't really do that. They have to depend on these associates that have those kinds of skills and are willing to take those kinds of direct chances with getting popped right in the middle of a score. I mean, they try to, they want to help fence it, and they want a little piece of the action. They may be a street tax or something, but they don't have the skills. Most mob guys, we had maybe one or two mob guys that were really big into arsons. They did a lot of arsons for hire. And that was kind of one, the only ones I can think of where they actually went out and did things like that. It was always the associates that did that. Somebody'd have a, you know about alarms. We had one guy that knew all about alarms, and he would do jewelry store things, and then he'd fence the jewels through a mob-connected jewelry store, and they would get a piece of it that way. But they didn't really go along on those other kinds of those scores, and they didn't plan them out either. You'd have a guy who was a mob associate who would be a setup guy.
Mm-hmm.
He would find the score. He would put the people together, and he would then, or at least find one of them who would have somebody that, you know, would go along with him, who would put together a crew.
Mm-hmm.
But and then he'd fence the property and maybe even provide, like one time he got caught providing a couple of guns for him, and, you know, went down for that. But mainly the mob guys, I'm with you. I don't know what they did. We were
all over
under boss for a while, Tuffy DeLuna. He'd get up late in the morning, and we were on him so much for about 3 months. We knew everything that he did. He'd get up late in the morning. I think he'd eat at home. He'd call his buddy, called his comp, as in compre, or your friend in Italian or Sicilian. I'm not sure which language it was, but he called him his comp. And he'd call his comp up and say he's going here, he's going there, but he wouldn't say exactly where it was. That guy would know, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
What was that place where we went before? Or we're going over.
And say, well, you mean where the ice cream is? And he'd say, yeah. And you'd be going, what the hell? Where's their ice cream shop around? And be trying to figure out where they were going. And then we'd follow him, and he'd run someplace. He'd maybe go down to what they called the trap, the social club, and he'd just hang out there, and then he'd leave from there. And by then, he may have a phone call coming in from Las Vegas. And after we really got on to him, we knew that he was expecting a phone call, which is almost every day. And he would go to a bank of payphones, and he'd be on the phone for, you know, 15, 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, and then leave again and maybe go back down at the city market and meet up with one of his bosses, with one of the Savella brothers, who were kind of Nick Savella was the actual boss, but his brother would stand in for him a lot, and he'd go down and meet up with them and kind of report about the conversation, and then he'd go on and he'd maybe go back over to the trap, social club, and hang out a little bit, and then he'd go home, and then he'd come back out, and he'd call his girlfriend and see what she was doing that night, and then he'd go back down out to a club, and he'd just sit in the back of the club with, you know, one or another guy that would come in. They'd just sit there, and, you know, they didn't drink heavily. You know, hell, if that'd been me back then, I'd have, by midnight, I'd have been staggered out that door. They'd sit that whole night in that club sipping on drinks, smoking cigarettes, and talking, and then go home 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Kind of depends. Sometimes they go to an after hours club, but they just sit and look and talk and couldn't figure out what they're doing for the most part, kind of being available to people, I guess. You never saw any of those professional thieves, Bobby Jean Jones and people like that, who were the good, you know, alarm men and burglars and guys that would steal truckloads of stuff. You never see them walk up and talk to them. They wouldn't talk to guys like that. They have somebody else do that. So that was kind of a day in Tuffy's life, this long, boring day with several conversations.
You know, you hit something on the head there, that they give this sort of mistaken impression when you read in the press. They'll talk about, you know, like a run construction company or something. And you get the idea that there's like this office with a mobster right on the construction site, you know, sitting there bellowing orders. And you're absolutely right. A lot of it is these associates, or like, you know, some friend of a mobster runs this company.
Yeah.
And kicks back money to, you know, his mafia buddy. And maybe the mafia buddy helps fix a couple contracts here and there, tenders or stuff. But they're not actively day to day working the payroll or something, or, you know, handing out, you know, lunch chits or something like that.
Right.
That there's sort of this mistaken impression. And that's very interesting that, you know, like, got a bunch of associates, let them take the risk. And, you know, if they make some money, like, by all means, sure, give me a cut. I'll give you action or whatever, or some contacts. So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, the realities of the mafia are rather interesting. Well,
you know, there's nothing like making money while you sleep, is there, Nate?
Yeah.
You made money while you slept when they were selling books.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling. It's a nice feeling.
Like, make money while you sleep, but you're out churning that something out the next day. You're doing something the next day to keep that going and get another one out there or something. And you know, there's a line from Don Henley, "The lure of easy money, it has a mighty strong appeal." Hope that's not a copyright violation, but it's apropos for these guys.
It's true enough.
True enough. I'm trying to think of other. I remember some of these young guys, it was like when I was in high school as a teenager in a small town, if you didn't have any work sometimes, especially when it was on the farm, you know, off seasons and wasn't much going on, you didn't have a steady job, you just go out and drive around and drive around and drive around. These guys, you'd see them just driving around, maybe go from one joint to the other, but just driving around and driving around. You think, oh, look, there goes Paul Tucci. Let's go see where he's going. Well, he'd, you know, go to one club and go in and not even, you know, maybe just chat somebody up a few minutes and get out and drive around and drive around. And yeah. Maybe stop in a restaurant and eat something and then drive around and drive around. And he wasn't even looking for a score. He wasn't really looking for anything. It didn't seem like killing time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think we've talked a little bit about the mob being a boring job. It's not so boring for, like I said, for moments of sheer terror, but hours and hours of boredom in between, which I can understand. And, you know, another thing, I've got this guy that I talk to all the time now, that Steve St. John, that actually was part of the crew that he went to watch him, and we ended up helping him go to the penitentiary for 10 years. Came back out, and we've become friends, and he saw the light, and he's got a square giant job. He has for quite a while now, and actually made pretty good money in the used car business. But we talked about that, and that's what he had. But he was constantly hustling. He was more like an associate, constantly hustling. He had all these drug deals out there going, these sellers, and he's constantly having to deal with them, and he had people. He was fencing property for people, and boosters and prostitutes were bringing him stolen property, and then he'd get that and give them some money or tell them to go see one of his dealers, and they'd give him so much delighted for how much property there was, and they'd have to get it over this other guy who actually had a storefront that was fencing, you know, would sell it back out to the public. And so his was a constant, you know, going and going and going, and almost wear you out. Or like a mob associate that's a bookie. Now, those guys, during the football season, man, they rock and roll. They are going. They have a couple of days off, but all weekend, especially starting with Friday night. I guess now it's Thursday night. Isn't there a football game on Thursday night? I think there is. Anyhow, but just before the last football game, and then again on Saturday, just before Sunday, people are trying to get their bets in for Sunday afternoon. And a lot of them wait till Sunday or Saturday afternoon, Saturday night to get those bets in for Sunday, because most of the games are on Sunday.
So they're
just running like crazy from one place to the other and trying to keep all that straight. And then they can kind of relax my Monday and watch the Monday night game and then go. And then Thursday they go out and collect and pay up and then they go on the run again. So that would be kind of a job in the mob to have, keep you busy, wouldn't it? Being the bookie.
Sure. Yeah. Keep your eye on your toes.
All right, Nate. Well, this has been great. You'll come back again, won't you?
Absolutely. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Gary.
All right. Nice talking to you. And remember, if you're a veteran and you believe you have problems that might be from PTSD connected to your service time, call your local vet center or the local VA hospital, or they have a national hotline, 1-800-273-8255, and press 1 if you are a vet. You can also go to their website, www.ptsd.va.gov. This site contains a lot of resources. Also, I have the donation button on my shop page. I also have my two movies up for rent for $1.99, Brothers Against Brothers and Gangland Wire. I have my book, Leaving Vegas, How FBI Wiretaps Ended Mob Domination of Las Vegas Casinos. So stay well out there. Good evening, folks.
Music provided by our good friend and super fan from Portland, Oregon, Casey McBride. Thanks, Casey.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.